I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness. Joining us today, Mr. Doug Somke, Honorable President, South Dakota Farmers Union. But let's do as we're always told to do. Let's make it official. Welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Ag Business Report. South Dakota Farmers Union, uniting farmers, ranchers, rural communities to strengthen South Dakota's Farmers Union. Doug Somke, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. God dang, I tell you what a beautiful day again, huh?
Is this March?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be. It's almost April, I'm pretty sure.
50 days into the new administration, we'll talk a little bit today about what's being done in D.C., all the things involving COVID, even do a little PPP. We're going to Oklahoma. I mean, we just got a full boat today.
We do, and we're going to have to stay right on top of it. We can't dilly-daddle around here if we're going to get through it all.
One of the things that you shared this morning, and that's working with the Biden administration, National Farmers Union Convention recap, market concentrations and biofuels. You want to hit that before we hit Mitch and Pierre?
Yeah, you know, we passed or adopted 4 special orders of business this year. You know, everything was virtual, so we weren't able to debate this stuff physically. It was a one-dimensional convention. So our special orders of business are a little bit bigger than they normally are. There's fewer of them, so we've got them kind of combined. And what you're talking about is, you know, we've got a lot of things in that special order, but it's mainly about how we can fund and help, you know, help America get through this COVID issue. And that's one of them. The biofuels is another one. You know, to that aspect, you know, we had an announcement yesterday from the EPA study on E30 down in Nebraska, which is a big, big deal. We'll talk about a little bit about that probably later. The biofuels and also the processing, the meat processing, you know, the protein processing.
That's a nice story out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, we're going to have a good story about that later today. You know, now that the Senate has passed the big bill, the financing bill for COVID, I think that's a big plus for us, especially for our state.
And Jamie Wood is going to be joining us from SBA in the show as well.
Yeah, she's going to talk to us about the PPP loans and what's available out there and kind of what the averages are of those loans to date.
Mitch Richter is telling us he's busy in Pierre. All I see is one vote differences on whether or not we ought to combine like Alaska and Rhode Island are doing. Mitch, where are we at?
We lost it by one vote, Bill. You're right. It was 17-18, and we were on the losing side of that yesterday. The vote may be reconsidered today. The motion was made to set that up if they want to do that. Still looking for one vote this morning. I don't know if we're going to find it or not. It's a tough deal. We're hopeful, but we'll know this afternoon about 1:30, I think.
Doug, Mitch, question I would ask you guys. What changes if we combine? What's the big deal that we would hear, Doug?
Well, you know, the big deal is, you know, agriculture is big enough in itself that it really should have its own department. But the real big deal is the fact that you're really asking cops to do two separate things. I mean, in the DENR, that's their job, right? I mean, they're supposed to protect our air, our water, and our soils. And you're asking them to do even a bigger job. And we're actually looking at declining the number of inspectors from what I'm seeing pre and proposed. So that's not the way we need to go. You know, I grew up in this state enjoying the outdoors, enjoying hunting and fishing besides just enjoying the land being a farmer. And that's important to me. And it's not the good guys that we're worried about. It's the bad guys. It's the ones that really cause the problems. And those are the ones that can do so much harm so quickly. And those are the ones that give even good farmers bad reputations, and we don't need that. And I think right now it even shows, you know, the numbers that we've seen out by the dairy industry the other day shows that there's nothing wrong with the way this is working today. Why are we worried about putting these two together? What's the whole point of putting them together? We've already shown that we've increased the numbers for dairy through this program. And a number of the people I know that are operating CAFOs are worried because right now they're not getting the service, the face time they need with that department to make sure they're doing things right by the rules and regulations. And when they get caught without doing them right, then it's on them. It's not on the department. And so why would we put producers in that realm?
Mitch, once a week you guys meet as farm organizations talking things that are going on. How can anybody be for this if they're in farm, thinking that combining the two gives us two things that are at the top of the list rather than farming, which has gone through some tough times anyway?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, they sell it really as a cost-saving measure. They said they would save about $450,000. And 10 or 15 years ago, we went through what they're going to try to do here now, and that is cross-train inspectors. Well, we tried that several years ago where you have people that go in and check the scales in certain places that have to have registered scales. They check the gas pumps to make sure that they're pumping a gallon at a time. They check the cosmetologist to make sure they're not using wrong chemicals or wrong tools. And they cross-train these people to go in so that when they went to a community, they could inspect all of those places. Well, guess what? It didn't really work that well because the guy that's checking to see if the gas pumps are pumping a gallon of gas really doesn't have the experience long-term to see what the cosmetologists are doing with nail and bending hair. So that didn't work out very well. Now, I think we're headed down that path again because the DE&R guys that are going to have to do the inspections on the ag side, they're used to dealing with DE&R issues. They don't have the history to deal with the ag issues. And you don't acquire that history just overnight in a training session. So I just don't see that it's good for South Dakota. Long term, you know, the next governor can undo that with an executive order, and I would think that they probably would. I just don't think that you're going to see the cost savings, and I think there's going to be pushback in the outlying years here from both people that use DE&R and the ag sector.
Mitch, let me ask you a question. What is there that Rhode Island does and Alaska does with this that tells us we want to be just like them in agriculture?
Well, they don't do anything because, you know, we're, like Doug said, we're a $34 billion industry, and I don't think Rhode Island or Alaska get to $1 billion in ag. So it's just not a good idea. Our surrounding states don't do it. I mean, look at Iowa, look at Nebraska, even Minnesota, North Dakota. I mean, everybody has their own ag department. If you're in the upper Midwest, you're an agriculture state, and you deserve to have people regulating you that have an ag background.
All right. We have about 40 seconds left for you. What else is cooking and appear that we should plan on listening to or watching tonight?
Well, it's all about the budget. The last 2 days, the budget and marijuana. One thing they passed yesterday was the $19 million. It's $12 million. It's the $19 million for the Dakota Event Center in Huron on the state fairgrounds. Farmers Union supports that. It's going to be a great facility. It's going to be economic driver for central South Dakota there. That's good. We're going to spend a lot of money at SDSU on some new buildings. The Board of Regents are going to put some new buildings in. We got $20 million for rail to increase railroads from Pierre to Rapid City. That's going to be helpful in the ag industry. So ag is going to come out pretty good during this legislative session in spite of the merger. That one-time money is going to get spent, and it's going to help agriculture in South Dakota.
All right, Mitch, I've got notes from 19,000 South Dakota Farmers Union members say get back to work, get something done in Pierre, will you?
I'll do that.
All right. Would you introduce our next guest, Doug?
Yeah, we got Lance Boyer. Lance is our health care expert in our insurance division, and him and I have had some really interesting conversations, especially talking about what happened out in Pierre this year with the Farm Bureau not having to comply by the health insurance regulators. And that can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. I think Lance can share some sight on what we can do currently without having to worry about, looking for a different plan.
Tell us, Lance.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, you know, those plans that they kind of push through, you know, they're non-standard plans. They don't have to comply. There's no oversight, so there's no consumer protections. You're kind of on an island. And I can tell you that, you know, if we just work within the existing law, people can keep quality health insurance, and they can get help, they can get the right plan, and they can get those costs down. You know, I like to say I keep my view from a kitchen table level of how does it directly impact our farmers and ranchers. You know, we've seen by working with the cost share reductions and the tax credits that are available inside of the Affordable Care Act, family farmers and ranchers can get help getting those health care costs down. I mean, let's be honest. Health insurance costs for family farmers and ranchers is one of their biggest budget items. So we like to sit down with folks, take a look at what's available, find out some income questions, go through it with them, and get them that help. You know, at the end of the day, this is really not a right or left issue. We consider it a right or wrong issue. There's a lot of levers inside of the current law that allow folks to get help. They don't have to go get a substandard plan to save money, because I can tell you there are cases out there where people went and bought a substandard plan and it ended up costing them the farm in the long run because their claims were denied or it wasn't covered or it was considered a pre-existing condition. With plans on the ACA, there are no pre-exes, there are no caps. People have the plans that are there that will stand behind them when something happens. You know, another area we talk about is this Medicaid expansion. How does that impact, you know, the ACA plans, states overall? Well, I can tell you only 12 states have not yet adopted Medicaid expansion, South Dakota being one of them. And that impacts people more than they know, because we've looked at many studies that show consumers pay on average of about 7 to 12% less for quality health plans in states that have the Medicaid expansion. It also takes that lower income folks that are really impacted, and it gives them the ability to have quality care as well. I mean, studies tell us that with Medicaid expansion, people get care before they go directly to the emergency room. They don't use that ER as a primary care visit. They actually have a primary care doctor. They can go in and get help, and that drives everyone's costs down, and it's a better route for them to get quality care.
Hey, Lance, we got about a minute left for you, but I just was wondering, what's if there's a young farmer or a young businessman that's employed on his own, having trouble finding inexpensive health care, what's some of the information that you would need from them just to give them a good quote on something better?
What if we need the ages of people in the household, if there's any tobacco use, and a couple of income questions. And what people don't understand is it's not an asset-based test like pure Medicaid. To get those cost share reductions and tax credits, doesn't matter the assets of the farm or ranch. We just look at some incomes, and as prices have been down, so have incomes. I've been in houses where we have saved people $10,000 a year on their health insurance, and they get to keep the same plan that they have now. They don't have to go get something they don't know. It's just about working within the system. If you want to talk to your local trusted Farmers Union agent, we have specialists that deal with this, and we can help people out.
Very good. We appreciate you weighing in this morning. A nice, easy name like Lance Boyer, All-American Kid, Medicaid expansion in South Dakota. Great topic. We appreciate your visit.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Buying a new truck for your farm or ranch is all about the bottom line. At Billion Fleet Farm and Ram Commercial Business Link, we know that better than anyone. We have the experience, selection, and industry-exclusive pricing and incentives to help you with your bottom line. Plus, new Ram trucks have been named Motor Trend Truck of the Year for the third year in a row. To see if you qualify for fleet pricing on a new Ram, call 888-531-1013 or go to billionauto.com/fleet.
Profitable, sustainable agribusiness does not exist in today's complex business environment without expert partners. Marsh McLennan Agency's agribusiness team is that partner. Marsh McLennan risk management experts deliver strategies, solutions to mitigate while protecting ag organizations. from the cooperatives, the food processors, protein producers, dairies, equipment dealers, and manufacturers, Marsh McLennan understands the complexities of agribusiness. Marsh McLennan, world-class resources tailored to your specific business, all with a personal touch and a team approach. For all your agriculture insurance needs, call Marsh McLennan Agency, 800-584-7054. That's 800-584-7054. Or go to marshmma.com. That's marshmma.com. Call today. Marsh McLennan Agency knows agriculture.
You can listen to Kello anywhere on your Android or iPhone. Download our mobile app at Kello.com. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
Welcome back. Doug Somke is the president, South Dakota Farmers Union. He's with us on a beautiful day in the state. We've got a little virtual and Zooming to talk about with the National Farmers Union recap. We've got a guy named Zach, and you got Zortman. You got three Z's this morning, Somke. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, we cover the alphabet every week here.
Zach, I understand you were a little busy this morning.
It's been quite a ride here, 12 days in, and can't say that I've ever had a job that I have more hope for enjoying over the long haul. It's been fun.
So, Zach, just so everyone knows, you're the new National FSA Administrator, and congratulations, man. I tell you what, we couldn't ask for a better person, a down-to-earth individual that's going to work just as hard as he works on his own ranch for farmers and ranches across the nation, not just across the state. So I'm really glad to call you my friend, and I'm really glad you're where you're at. So how's it going right now? I mean, know you're a lot of meetings, a lot of organization to get wrapped around. But what do you see the first step? Where are you going next?
Well, thanks, Doug. And I forget what the other guy's name, Bill, maybe.
Bill. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. And I the same as the success that I've had in my life previous to the FSA is going to be how important it is to have success here. And this ranch that you mentioned that I do some work on, we'd be nothing if it wasn't for the team around here. And I just want everybody out there listening in Kello Land to know that you've got thousands of dedicated professionals who have devoted their life to career service to try to get the programs of the Farm Service Agency out there to you. And many of them are excited about the change in leadership that's happened with the Biden administration's initiatives of empowering producers to move towards more climate smart agriculture and find ways to make that put more money in the producer's pocket, you know, because it's all about that bottom line for the producers. And how do we carve out more income from what we're doing? That's the challenge that we all face.
Zach, one of the things that I was going to mention really quick, and that is we hear an awful lot of people on both sides of the aisle, particularly if they live in Iowa, South Dakota, or Minnesota, to say this Tom Vilsack is exactly what we need as an ag secretary.
Yeah, I agree. I ended up coming to work for him. I think that he's got a great vision for what the administration wants to do and how to make that work. Based on his previous experience at the department, you know, he's the only two-time Secretary of Agriculture. So really excited to get to work with Secretary Vilsack and move some of the administration initiatives out there. You know, another thing that's important in these three states that you mentioned is the biofuels. And, of course, that's a critical component. One of the things that we're working on internally is how do we help quantify the amount of carbon that's being sequestered in the production of those biofuels, because that's a factor that hasn't really been explored too much in the last few years. So we're really excited to help our friends that are engaged in that segment of the ag industry.
Zach, I know you've got a strong background and interest in helping young farmers get started and understanding and working with the administration on loans and special loans. And now you've got a special method that you think might be helpful. What do you think the chances are that we'll be able to implement something like that going forward?
So I'll share just a little bit. We created a CDFI when I was over at the Intertribal Agriculture Council, and that CDFI has decided to take an investment approach versus a borrowing and lending approach.
and in exchange for a higher annual return on that investment, they're able to leave that capital deployed out there to help that producer grow. And it's been my experience working with producers at their kitchen table that it's not necessarily the interest rate that destroys the operation. It's how fast that capital is clawed back out of the operation in the form of principal repayment. So what we're trying to visualize is how do we, within FSA's existing practices, move towards something that's more of an investment style approach that can really lead to the longer term benefits that are being contemplated by the administration with regard to climate change mitigation strategies, and do it in an equitable manner. Because too often, as we go about our service out here, we find places that frankly don't have the service of others, where an interest rate might be 300 basis points higher. Well, that can be pretty challenging when you stack principal repayment right on top of that. And the beginning farmers and ranchers, think about it like a soil bed. You've got to make that soil bed a welcoming place for a beginning farmer or rancher. And if I was 20 years old and looking for career options right now, I would wonder about, is agriculture really where I want to be?
Right.
Because we haven't done a lot as a society to help that producer know that he's going to be able to leverage his hard work and his innovation towards improving his financial outcome. Everything is dependent on whether there's going to be a government assistance program or how long the bank will let him borrow the money. So we really need to take a look at how do we make this more attractive to our young and beginning farmers and ranchers. We think that investment model is something worth exploring more, and we would sure enjoy some feedback from some of our stakeholders on what their solutions are.
No, I think you're exactly right, Zach. That's been a real problem. Say, we got about a minute here. Is there anything else you'd really like to share with us that we haven't talked about yet?
I'd like to share that we understand that there is a challenge with the posture of our local offices, but we've got to take care of the safety of not only our staff, but also of our customers. And we're just waiting for the situation to change so that we can get those offices back open. While we do that, we're looking at trying to engage in more virtual meetings, try to find ways for you to virtually sign documents if you're comfortable with that. If not, Dropbox is in anything that we can do to help improve your experience with the Farm Service Agency. I'm all ears, and I welcome the opportunity to visit more with you all in person.
Zach, let me ask you this. For those that don't know, you're from where in South Dakota?
I am from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, located in north central South Dakota. My hometown is Eagle Butte.
Well, know that not only this show, but my ag business show that is on every day, you're certainly welcome to come on, share more information so people get to know you.
That sounds great. I sure look forward to it, sir.
Zach,
Doug, thanks. Bill, thank you very much.
Zach Ducheneau, new national FSA administrator. We're going to make a little trip to Oklahoma this morning. Are you ready?
Hey,
you
I'm ready.
Got your boots packed?
Absolutely. Got them on.
Why Frontier Bank? Great. Personal. Service. Checking, savings, loans, retirement. Satisfaction guaranteed. Period. Go to frontierbk.com.
Nothing has embodied the American spirit like the family farmer. Year after year, they continue to work the land and plant their crops. Through droughts, floods, and uncertain markets, they keep that spirit alive with another crop harvested for the next generation. And for that, we tip our hats to them. Farmers Union Insurance, protecting those that protect America's food source.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at Kello.com. From the Kello.com News Center, this is your Kello Agribusiness Report.
With your Ag News, I'm Farm and Ranch Director Sarah Heinrich. We'll have details on beef imports, but first a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Scott Steffes, and I want to invite everyone to our next Ag Iron Auction at the River Valley Fairgrounds in West Fargo. This is a live auction, folks, with multiple auction rings selling farm and light construction equipment. We hope you plan to spend the day or simply join us on your smartphone or home computer with live internet bidding. There are hundreds of pictures and full details on our website, steffesgroup.com, so check it out. Last time, don't forget, Wednesday, March 10th at 10 sharp, another Ag Iron event from the Steffes Group.
The Department of Agriculture is out with its December cattle and beef trade data, meaning a full view of 2020 is now possible. Imports of beef are continuing to soar with an all-time high of 4.4 billion pounds coming into the country in 2020. The data shows the average price of fed cattle in 2020 was just under $1.09 per pound, while all fresh retail beef prices were the highest yearly average in history at $6.39 per pound. RCAF USA CEO Bill Bullard says U.S. cattle producers have been receiving depressed prices for the last 5 years.
Cattle producers are now receiving below the cost of production, while consumers are paying record prices for beef. That indicates that the market is fundamentally broken and must be fixed quickly. Otherwise, we will continue to see an exodus of our American family farmers and ranchers who raise and sell cattle.
Imported beef, he noted, was extremely cheap in 2020, as the average fed cattle price was lower than any other year during the past decade. In fact, the U.S. has been a net importer of beef and cattle for the past several decades, with a cumulative trade deficit of over 20 million metric tons.
And what this does is it displaces the domestic cattle producers' access to their own American market, because they're using cheaper, undifferentiated imports as a direct substitute, and that is harming not only the cattle producers out here, but rural communities all across America.
Bullard added that after seeing the 2020 data, both cattle producers and consumers should be calling on their congressional delegations to tell them Americans must put a stop to failed trade policies that promote cheaper imports at the expense of the American cattle farmers and ranchers. With a look at your top Ag News headlines from across the region, I'm Farm and Ranch Director Sarah Heinrich.
A new record high is expected in the Sioux Falls area today. Our high temperature at 72, south winds switching around to the west at 15 to 25. For tonight, it looks like some scattered rain will develop, perhaps a clap of thunder, low temperature 38. Tomorrow, areas of rain, maybe some thunder again, high temperature 45. That's your weather from the Storm Center at Kettleland TV. I'm Brian Karstens.
How do we know the breaking news before it happens? We used a wiretap.
This didn't happen. It is made up.
Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
With our South Dakota Farmers Union President Doug Somke, I'm Bill Zortman, and this is our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show. You can visit with the website, SDFU website, almost like they're talking to you. It's not a Zoom, but it's close. At sdfu.org. It's got important information about the show, the podcast from A to Z. Doug, before we turn to the great Sooner State of Oklahoma, we're just months from the fairs, the state fairs, farmers headed to the fields.
Yeah, you know, this winter has been kind of nice, and it's gone actually pretty fast considering we've all been locked up with the problems of the COVID. So I'm looking really, really looking forward to this summer and this spring, Bill.
We need to mention, too, and I'm sure they mentioned it in Oklahoma and the other states that have a lot of agriculture, and that is the stress factor that's been out there in agriculture, particularly with COVID and just our times.
Yeah, you know, we're fortunate that our prices have come back, you know, not only for the grains, but also in livestock. I've been in the sale barns the last few weeks, and they've, you know, really pretty strong compared to what they've been. And so that's a good thing. But it's still the, you know, there's always stress in agriculture, no matter what direction you look. You learn to live with it. But at sometimes you just can't. It's just overbearing. And so you got to keep in mind of your neighbors and, you know, just be visiting with them when you get a chance. And that's another thing with the COVID thing. We're not allowed to have the open meetings like we've always had in the past. And so that's always got to be in the back of your mind. It's something that Farmers Union has constantly focused on as well.
I kind of keep it simple. Prices have been better, but there have been challenges as well, leaving neighbors needing to help neighbors.
Exactly.
I don't care where we're at for that. Convincing those in agriculture that part of the future is being able to pass it on to the next generation. How are we doing with that?
Yeah, we're doing a pretty good job with that. You know, I mean, it's still a challenge. You know, the biggest thing is the capital. You know, as Zach talked in our story previous, you know, that's the biggest challenge for agriculture for young people is getting enough capital and keeping it.
So South Dakota Farmers Union has how many members?
We have 20,000 plus.
So when we grow up, do we want to be like Oklahoma with 55,000?
You know, I've always envied them because of their numbers.
Really?
Yeah, I really have. I mean, for them in North Dakota, I tell you what, not only do they have numbers, but they're good people too.
All right, Scott Blubaugh, Oklahoma Farmers Union. Scott, I was telling your gal that ran me down late yesterday afternoon that I had a chance to work the Texas Panhandle. Gave a couple of commencement speeches out in the Dust Bowl of the Panhandle of Oklahoma, and even got to throw a few of the cow turds at Beaver, Oklahoma. So does that qualify me as at least being a neighbor to Oklahomans?
Well, I think so. I think so. You've got a lot of our activities out in western Oklahoma for sure.
You know, you've got a lot to talk about, and my good friend here, Doug, has been bragging about what you do, why you're such a special guy. I'm going to have to decide, being a Texan, you know, I wasn't always an Oklahoma Sooner with Barry Switzer, I'll tell you that. But for the most part, they play pretty good football, and they had a lot of good stuff that's out there. In fact, we got a kid from Aberdeen that played at Oklahoma.
Yes,
that's now the head coach at University of Tennessee.
Yep.
But, Scott, you wouldn't care about that. You're just Boomer Sooner through and through, I'll bet.
Well, I tell you what, we've got two great football teams down here at the Oklahoma State Cowboys and the OU Sooners, and we root for both teams here.
Cattle processing plants, that's what caught Doug's eye, and he wanted us to take a little time this morning. You know, we know what they do at the cattle processing plants, but Doug and Scott, what's the important thing we should come away with?
Yeah, I wanted to have Scott on today, Bill, because at our last convention and our National Farmers Union board meeting, Scott shared with us what they've been doing to help the consumers and also the producers. When the obvious thing happened under COVID and some of our processing plants were shut down and how quickly people were without. You know, without the protein needs that they needed. And Scott and his group have come forward. They've done some great work, bipartisan work. This is not a Democrat-Republican issue. This is about farmers helping farmers and consumers and all. And he's got a great story to tell. And, Scott, I just hope you take your time and tell us the same story you told us at the national board meeting, because that was so important, I thought, for everyone to hear and what you guys have accomplished. And I'd like to be able to take a few nuggets away from this and try to do something here in South Dakota, just as you are.
Well, you bet. I'll be glad to share with you what we've been able to do here. And I hope this model can be used in other states as well. I think it can be. Maybe not everywhere, but definitely some places. So, you know, during the pandemic, we saw grocery store shelves for the first time in generations be empty in the meat counters and some other products as well, but especially in the meat counters. And we got calls from all over the nation. I did interviews with some of the national media people as well, and they really didn't understand why, you know, we had a shortage of meat in the freezers when we had so many live animals out here that needed processed. So, anyway, what we were able to do here in Oklahoma was we passed legislation last year during the pandemic and created the Oklahoma Certified Beef Act. And what that does is it created a definition in statute that says cattle that are bred, born, raised, and slaughtered or processed here in the state of Oklahoma can qualify for the Oklahoma Certified Beef label. After we worked very hard to get that legislation passed there at the state capitol, and it passed in a unanimous vote in both the House and the Senate, and then the governor signed it into law. Now, this is a very red state we're in, and we're kind of a blue or a purple organization, I suppose you might say here. And so for us to get unanimous support, bipartisan support for this was pretty awesome, because, you know, when the consumers speak loudly that what they want, it cuts across party lines and gets rid of some of the silly partisanship that goes on a lot of times, and we get things done. But what this we have created the Oklahoma Certified Beef Association here at the Oklahoma Farmers Union, and we have staff here administrating this program. But basically, way it works is a rancher is really great for a cow-calf rancher. So they can certify their cattle being bred, born, raised, and processed in Oklahoma. And then we have a tremendous demand right now from consumers wanting to know where their food comes from. And so in a roundabout way, this law created a state label. So, you know, country of origin label is something we have always supported here in Oklahoma, but it's not the law of the land right now. But this really creates a state of origin label. And so consumers know where their food comes from, and they want to buy it that way. And so we've been able to get this product into the restaurants, some of the very best restaurants in Oklahoma. Four-star Diamond restaurant here in Oklahoma City is on top of the Devon skyscraper, tallest building in Oklahoma. And the governor ate the very first steak a couple months ago. And so we got all kinds of media attention from that. Tremendous demand in both restaurant industry, the small independent grocers are very interested, some of the Whole Foods type stores around, and some of the independent owned chains, smaller chains around are interested in marketing this beef, as well as many of our producers are selling directly to the consumers as well. And so we're signing up a lot of farmers and ranchers every week that want to be part of our program, part of our association. And then what we try to do is connect them with the retail buyers that want to buy their beef product. And beef is the number one commodity here in Oklahoma. It outranks everything. And so because of the pandemic, we're seeing a total rebirth here of our small mom-and-pop processing plants, and it's really exciting to see this. We have no major beef processing plants here in Oklahoma. Now, we have the big four have plants and chickens and then hogs, but there is none in Oklahoma as far as beef goes. So all the beef here that's processed are small mom-and-pop processors. And so it really fits this program well. And what we're seeing is tremendous demand by the consumers for locally produced beef where they know where it comes from. And so we're seeing waiting lists here in these small plants, 1 year up to 18 months. To get animals beef processed there. And so in the CARES Act, our governor allotted $10 million of our CARES money to small mom-and-pop processors on grants so they could upgrade some of these old facilities and get them state-inspected and USDA-inspected. Also, they were able to double their capacity on their weekly kill numbers. And so all these things added to more capacity in our industry. But we've also been working with several of our Native American tribes here as well. And they've been building brand new facilities around the state and putting more of these small, what I'd consider, you know, small mom and pop, employing less than 100 people, processing plants in the state here. And again, they're booked up a year in advance, almost the day they open their doors. Scott, we're really excited about that.
Scott, we got to wrap up here, but can you tell us how do they qualify? How do they? How do you become a? How do you keep track of what certifies that they're born, raised, and processed there? What do the producers have to do?
Yeah, the way we do it here, we have a third-party verification system that they need that processor to sign off on. They also need like a veterinarian or a banker or someone, a feed salesman maybe, that's real familiar with their operation, that will sign an affidavit that those cattle were born and raised there on that place, that these aren't imported cattle. They're produced here, they're slaughtered here, processed here. And then we keep those documents here at our association, all those affidavits. The producer, the farmer rancher, signs off on that as well, and a sworn statement saying that these are all truthful things. And then they earn the label, the Oklahoma Certified Beef label we'll provide them with, in both electronic form and in a label sticker form, whichever that, you know, their independent processor prefers to use. Then we keep the records on those and police that the best we can. Now, there can be liars and fraud involved, but we're doing our very best to keep that out. In anything, there's always people want to try to cheat the system. Yeah. But so far, we've not run into any problems with that. And we have been working with our Department of Agriculture here, hand in hand with them, to enforce these rules.
Scott, we really appreciate having you on.
We'll
gotta get
back
on to our
another
next
time.
Yeah, we'll have you on again for sure. But I'm looking forward to next week. You're going to join our board as well, and we'll really get into the weeds with you there.
Hey, you bet, Doug. Glad to be able to be on with you, and glad to work with you throughout the year as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
SBA, PPP, next.
Buying a new truck for your farm or ranch is all about the bottom line. At Billion Fleet, Farm and Ram Commercial Business Link, we know that better than anyone. We have the experience, selection, and industry-exclusive pricing and incentives to help you with your bottom line. Plus, new Ram trucks have been named Motor Trend Truck of the Year for the third year in a row. To see if you qualify for fleet pricing on a new Ram, call 888-531-1013 or go to billionauto.com/fleet.
Profitable, sustainable agribusiness does not exist in today's complex business environment without expert partners. Marsh McLennan Agency's agribusiness team is that partner. Marsh McLennan risk management experts deliver strategies, solutions to mitigate while protecting ag organizations from the cooperatives, the food processors, protein producers, dairies, equipment dealers, and manufacturers. Marsh McLennan understands the complexities of agribusiness. Marsh McLennan, world-class resources tailored to your specific business, all with a personal touch and a team approach. For all your agriculture insurance needs, call Marsh McLennan Agency, 800-584-7054. That's 800-584-7054. Or go to marshmma.com. That's marshmma.com. Call today. Marsh McLennan Agency knows agriculture.
How do you become a fighter for life?
Strict attention to detail. That's what sets Kubota Construction Equipment apart. It's how they maximize performance, increase strength, and give you the dependability you demand. Kubota engineers equipment precisely at every level. It's what makes them a leader. Check out the Kubota Skid Loaders SSV Series. Today they're new. Tomorrow they'll be legendary. What do you want to accomplish?
Pfeiffer's in Sioux Falls, serving the region for over 75 years. Become a Pfeiffer for life. Go to pfeiffersonline.com.
South Dakota may need your help, so listen up. It's at least common news that people are moving to South Dakota in record numbers. It's good for them, and it's good for us. Business grows, schools grow, opportunity grows, and South Dakota is moving up onto the east side. But one thing has to happen. We need to make room in houses. Right now, the Tony Bachman Group has eager buyers moving in, but frankly, they need the opportunity that others moving out provide. Face it, there's just not enough home listings on the market. Here's what you can do. Connect with the Tony Bachman Group and learn about listing your current home. And get insider information on how to make your own move into your next home. It's time to help South Dakota to move out, move in, move up with the Tony Bachman Group, your trusted name in real estate.
Join the discussion on Facebook.
I've got strong opinions on Facebook.
At KELO Radio, Kello News Talk 1320, 107.9.
Well, we got money. Now, the banks aren't making counterfeit money. There's just money out there. And who better to explain what we're going to do with all this, how it relates to agriculture, than Jamie Wood, SBA Regional Director here in South Dakota. Jamie, you ready to take on Doug Somke today?
Well, you know, good morning. I've had three cups of coffee and some chips, so I think I'm ready. Power breakfast. But good morning, everybody, and I really enjoyed the updates of your previous guest. I'm married to a Texan, so I actually understood everything that he was saying.
Sounded right at home, didn't he?
He did, you know. And just have to slow down your listening a little bit, and it was all good what he said. I loved what he said about small businesses and making sure that you know where your food is from and local. And yes, I agree. If anything good came out of the pandemic, it was that, you know, the food industry, you know, knowing where you get your food is very important. And people started coming together again in the kitchen, right, and sharing some meals together. So that's all good. But a little bit about what's going on with Paycheck Protection Program. So we have a big day today. This is the ending day of that two-week window where Paycheck Protection Program was only available to small businesses that had less than 20 employees. So that means 19 or less you could claim on your Paycheck Protection Program application. The lenders have been working really diligently across South Dakota. The numbers, the data kind of surprised me a bit. I thought it may be a whole lot more. I know there's a lot in the queue waiting still to get processed, but we jumped up about 2,000 more loans over the past week here in South Dakota. So now we are up to 22,052 approved loans as of this past Sunday, and that's about $686 million of infusion. Average loan size right now is $31,000 for the Paycheck Protection Program, and that includes first draw and second draw. These are just 2021 loans. So we've already done over, I think it's about 46,000 total loans since last year. So that means a lot of people have been leveraging these, you know, with small businesses for both first draw and second draw. So the application window, if you're going to get in and you have less than 20 employees, you still have time to apply today at your local lender. They'll consider it and get you into that approval queue. And then it's wide open for tomorrow. So a lot of applications are in the queue waiting for approval for the first draw and second draw. That's for small businesses up to 500 employees for the first draw, and second draw is for employees up to 300 employees for those sorts of small businesses. And for second draw, you do have to demonstrate that 25% reduction in revenue between 2020 and 2019. So there's a couple ways you can show that 25% reduction. If you are on a fiscal year calendar, you can do a fiscal year annualization. Or if you're on calendar year from January through December, you can do a bi-quarter assessment of that. So it just has to be any quarter last year, 2020, compared to the 2019 quarter, if you had a 25% reduction. I was just out west last week in western South Dakota. Rapid City and Spearfish did a lot of outreach and talked to many businesses that they started out really slow early on in that first quarter and maybe second quarter, and then they had a record, you know, tourism season, for instance. But they're still eligible for that second draw because they had at least one quarter that was a 25% reduction compared to 2019. So please just get in there and talk to your local lender. There's over 300 of those in South Dakota, and we're working with them diligently so they have the knowledge and the access to these approval platforms to be able to get your application in. And don't second guess yourself. If you just get in, it's a definite no if you don't ask. And that's what my parents always told me, and I try to apply that to everything that I do in life now, besides make every day great. So, and the application window is open till the 31st of March, Bill.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, when's that open till? So.
Oh, hi. Yeah, till the end of March, March 31st. And we don't know if that'll be extended. Right now, there's across the nation, We know that there are $162 billion that have been used out of the 284. So there's well over $80 billion remaining in the PPP funds. So there's still about 3 weeks to apply. Don't wait till the 31st. You know, go ahead and get your application in. And we don't know if this will be extended or not, so plan on it. That is the deadline and maybe final deadline. And we're really, you know, excited to keep bringing these to South Dakota.
One of the things that you share with me is the importance of having a banker you can trust that can help you get it done.
Yes, there's nothing that compares to that in-person connection and relationship, you know, for any part of your business. And so the lending one is super important, you know, knowing your lender, the lender knowing you. And what we're finding here in a place like South Dakota that's rural and those community lenders that are across the state, you know, whether they're here in Sioux Falls or out in a very small town, you know, any pocket of across South Dakota has lots of small towns. And we've talked to lenders that are in towns that have, you know, less than 900 people or even smaller, and they're the only show in town, you know, for lending, and they have very close relationships with the small business owners. So please make a relationship if you don't have one. You know, find a lender, too, that you feel is compassionate about your vision and your dream for your business. And once you get that relationship in place, or if you have it, you know, make sure that you're rejuvenating that relationship. Meet with your lender once in a while, not just a phone call, but, you know, go over and have a cup of coffee so that you know them. And it's easier to get to the yes at the lending table when they trust in you and your vision.
Jamie Wood, SBA, appreciate the time. Sorry we talked a little bit more Texan, and my guess is that they didn't have any Texas Longhorns. Don't you think that probably is true in Oklahoma?
I think, you know, there's a little rivalry between Oklahoma and Texans, but I think they're all related, you know, just like us and North Dakotans and Minnesotans, and, you know, we're all the same people.
There you
and
go.
We know how to work hard and get things done.
All right, we got to move on to Laura Edwards, our South Dakota State climatologist. Great day out there. Everybody can look outside and see the sun shining. It's going to be in the 60s and 70s, but it's coming to a screeching halt.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day today, and I told my kids the same this morning as they were getting ready for school. I said, enjoy this day, because tomorrow we're going to drop 30 degrees off our high temperature. And same in Sioux Falls, high tomorrow, about 41 degrees, and a chance of rain, snow, breezy conditions. So we're going to get, I kind of joke, our third winter tomorrow as we get a big change in the weather here.
It's always that time of year, though. March is a unpredictable one, but you can always count on the Ides of March being kind of rough, can't you?
Yeah, we do see a lot of ups and downs in March. And, you know, there's kind of a joke that when state tournament time, you know, we see a blizzard or two. We've been pretty fortunate, haven't had any substantial snowstorms this year, or this March, rather. And most of the snow tomorrow will be northwest of Sioux Falls. Huron looks to be an area of higher snow, 2 to 5 inches. And that kind of stretch from Chamberlain up to Watertown, Sisseton, I think is where we're going to see more of the snow tomorrow.
We really need moisture, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, it's going to miss, you know, we're going to see some moisture in Sioux Falls, maybe a quarter inch or so, but we really have a big hole to get out of as we had our 22nd driest winter on record statewide, and also 22nd warmest as well. So, yeah, we could use every drop here as we get into the spring season.
Great job, Laura. Appreciate you joining us. We'll talk again soon. Doug Somke.
Great, thank you.
Great show today. Lots of people that we met.
Hey,
things that we can work on.
Where'd the time go?
It's gone. Just like the 70-degree temperatures tomorrow. So I need to say, I'm Bill Zortman, South Dakota Farmers Union President Doug Somke, 20,000 members. Our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9, KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.